Tonight we're moving to Matthew chapter 5, 33 through 37. You might notice that we've skipped a few verses from this morning. And it's not that I'm skipping those verses because they deal with lust and divorce and those ugly topics. But it's because I wanted to deal with those on a Sunday morning. And so we'll talk about those not next week, but in 2 weeks. There is so much good stuff in the Sermon on the Mount. And obviously, we do have more here on Sunday morning. And so I try to plan it and hit the sermons that might appeal to those audiences more. And so we're going to jump around throughout these three chapters, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, over the next several months. Tonight is a very important lesson, though, and really one that applies to all of us so much as well, and that is dealing with our integrity. Our integrity. Notice the passage from Matthew 5, 33 through 37. Again, you've heard that it was said of those of old, "You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn." Once again, Jesus begins by talking about what the Pharisees said about the Old Testament law. Notice the emphasis was upon the concept of swearing falsely. And then it also had to do performing their oaths to the Lord. The book of the law would speak about this. For example, in Exodus 27, "And you shall not take the Lord's God's name in vain," one of the Ten Commandments. "You shall not swear by my name falsely and so profane the name of your God," Leviticus 19:12. "When a man vows a vow to the Lord, he shall not break his word." Whenever you make an oath, whenever you make a vow, you're expected to keep it, the Israelites were. And they were to be faithful in fulfilling their oaths or vows. And they weren't to swear using the Lord's name. But it seems that the Pharisees had taken this and twisted it and used it in all sorts of ways. For example, they had shifted this to involve the concept of emphasizing the Lord's name. And so, as long as you did not use the Lord's name in a profane way, then you could be dishonest. And so that led then to them having to use all these other things. In our context, Jesus mentions swearing by the heaven, for it's the throne of God, swearing by earth, because it's the footstool, and swearing by Jerusalem. You see, they would have these other things that were religious, but they weren't the name of God. They weren't Yahweh. And that was to add emphasis to their word. Turn to Matthew chapter 23, a little later on, verses 16 through 22. Notice how Jesus describes this here. "Woe to you, blind guides, who say if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing. If anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath. You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold of the temple that has made the gold sacred? You say if anyone swears by the altar, it's nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound by his oath. You blind men, for which is greater, the gift of the altar that makes the gift sacred? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it or by everything on it. Whoever swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. Whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it." Let me just put this on elementary terms. They were playing a big game of "I crossed my fingers." In other words, "I said that, but I said it with the right formula. I said it by the gold of the temple." Or "I said it," I guess it was, I should say, "by the temple and not by the gold of the temple. Therefore, I'm not obligated to fulfill it. I said it by the altar, not by the gift that was on the altar. Therefore, I'm not obligated to fulfill it." It was a very religiously legalistic way of using white lies and getting out of doing their obligations and their commitments
that they were making.
Stott, in his commentary, talks some about it, and he says this about it.
He says, if the precise wording of the vow formula is not correct, then it's irrelevant. And so they got so preoccupied with all the formulas that they really were adding no value to their words. And Jesus,
in this context, he's not saying you and I cannot take an oath
if we were to be elected an official and have to take an oath, or if we're asked to go and testify in a jury case here or a law case here, and they ask us to put, I swear, to tell the truth and the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God, upon the Bible, and they ask us to do that. He's not telling us that we cannot do that. That's not what this passage is about. But this passage, rather, is simply about honesty and integrity. It's about not having to add a lot of meaningless words to your word. It's about being dependable, and being faithful to your commitments and to your words. And not using extra words to add strength to your words. There's no need, and this is one of the reasons, this is a separate, let me just go off on a little soapbox real quickly. So much foul language is useless even in why it's used. I feel like that so many times people use foul language. When I hear them use foul language, they're using it in a way that it is really, I guess, to try to add emphasis and importance and excitement and maybe weight to their words. And not only is it foul and wrong to use, but it begs the question, why do you need to use such strong language? And then on the other hand, people can use phrases like we might often hear, well, I swear. I think that's what Jesus is talking about here. There's no need to say those kind of things. If you will be a person of your word, then your word is all that is needed. And so that's what Jesus is dealing with here.
He's dealing with the issue of honesty and integrity. And this is an issue that we find throughout the New Testament. In Romans chapter 12, verse number 17, Paul would say in that context that we are to present all things honorable and do the best we can to present things honorable in the sight of all men.
Notice, repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable or honest or ethical in the sight of all men. And then in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25, the Bible says this, therefore, having put away falsehood, let each of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Speak the truth with our neighbor.
So how is your integrity? How is your integrity? Well, I think all of us can use a regular integrity checkup. I want to tell you a story that
I got. First of all, my author made the point that really we should not be the kind of people that every time we say something, people say, really? Is that true? Now, obviously, there's a little bit of joking nature there. But that's really kind of the point of this message of Jesus, is that your word needs to be dependable and reliable. This is a teacher who teaches in a college setting, and he said that he teaches the Sermon on the Mount, and he said his students nowadays get very upset and critical of public figures who get caught up in dishonesty and all that went on in 2008 with all the corporate corruption and Wall Street and the CEOs and all the problems that was there. And they really, tend to get upset at that. He said, but I wanted to show them that they also can be very guilty of this. And Jesus is talking to them. And so he came up with this story. And I want to share that story with you. Suppose it's your last semester at school. You're in college. You're about to graduate. You're about to marry that special someone, and you've got a job lined up with an accounting firm, and you get the dreaded call from the registrar's office, and you're one course short of graduation. There was a mistake, your advisor messed up, and you complain, you cry, but you had to take this extra course. And it's American literature, wouldn't you know it? And you have to read the Scarlet Letter. You've read the Scarlet Letter, and it's another boring old book, and you didn't really enjoy it that much. You had to read Huckleberry Finn, and you read those books. And you made it through the class, and you did the work. Until the last book was Moby Dick. Moby Dick is 800 dense pages about whaling. You're from Kansas. Whales haven't been a part of your life. You're thinking they're not going to be. And so you've read your other books up until now, but you're thinking, I'm not going to read Moby Dick. I've got all these other things going on. I'm getting ready to graduate. So you get the Cliff Notes. You get the Monarch Notes, another version of those. You watch the movie, both movies, actually, the Gregory Peck one and the other one with the Star Trek guy. I'm not sure which one he's talking about there. But he said, you're not really expecting to get an A in the class, just a C. It's fine with you, as long as you pass. You come to the final test. The final test is going to be over Moby Dick. You think, hey, I've got this. Got it covered. There's one question on the test. One question. Did you read Moby Dick? If you answer that question truthfully, you'll get a zero on the final. You will fail the course. You won't graduate. You won't get that job. You line up the person you're going to marry probably won't marry you. And he says, and he's done this with his students, and he said that 95% of my students honestly say in that situation they would lie. And then they began to explain to me why they would be right to do so and why it's a victimless crime. What about you? What would you have done? Teachers say that cheating is epidemic and that there's so all kinds of problems with that, and I know when I was in school, and I remember it was actually did well, I think, at not cheating except one class, and I still feel bad. And Kyle Butt always told me, said you'll feel bad about that. We had the answers to his quizzes, and I thought, why didn't the guy ever change his quizzes? But we had to, and I did the work, but we still looked at those old quizzes so we would know what was going to be on the test. It's not the right thing to do, is it? Jesus is talking about our integrity, our honesty. He goes on, he tells another story that I want to relate to you about a speaker who gets up and the speaker says, I want to tell you that I've interviewed some of the highly successful people. And you know, you hear this a lot. And one of the key characteristics about highly successful people is that they are men and women of integrity. And he says, basically, the speaker's making the point, if you want to be successful, then be honest. And this author makes a good point. He says, that right there is the problem. Because we don't have problems being honest when it's easy and it's about success. We have problems being honest when it gets us into problems and it causes sacrifices and causes us to have to hurt. As he put it, anybody can have integrity when it leads to success. The question is, will we have integrity when it leads to the cross? How would you do on the Moby Dick test?
In Dr. Harley's work, his needs, her needs books in our marriage classes, he talks about four types of liars.
And I think that, though that's in a marriage perspective, I think that these are still helpful to think about. There's the born liar, and these are the people that you know, often it seems even from their teenage years, they just can lie, and they're very good at it, and you can't trust them, and you learn to almost doubt everything they say and even psychologists and counselors who study these kind of people even say sometimes they even don't even know. At least they've gotten so confused on really what the truth is. And they live in delusion many times about the truth. Born liars. Then there's those who are avoid trouble liars. They do not lie generally except to avoid trouble.
And in a marriage, they will lie to when they should tell the truth because it keeps them out of trouble. To the boss, they'll lie when they would have to be honest and it might get them in trouble. They would lie on the Moby Dick test because it's going to get them in trouble. Then the next kind of liar is the protector liar. And once again, in a marriage context, this is the person who honestly, he loves his spouse. But he or she lies as a way of protecting, at least in their mind, they're rationalizing, I'm going to protect my spouse. For example, the husband feels like he needs to be making more money, but he didn't make his commission that month. But he didn't want to tell his wife he didn't make his commission that month. So he will avoid it or lie about it. And then when he takes care of the bills, and let's say he doesn't have the money then to pay a bill, he doesn't want to worry her. He knows she's got enough worries, so he will lie about that. That's the protector liar. Now, they lie to protect someone else. And many times, this gets them in a lot of trouble as well. And finally, there's the vain or trying to look good liar. This is the one who lies out of pride and lies to make themselves look better. I remember I had a friend growing up, me and my cousin. For a while, we thought in junior high school days, we thought this guy was just the coolest thing ever because, you know, he could tell all these stories and he could back up a lot of it. But then we started to realize that a lot of things he said weren't true. He was saying those things to impress us. And this is the trying to look good liar who lies to those things. Now, all those things, as I generally describe them, may sound very broad, but if you really think about them, and just about, we've done that class before, in that session, people always come in and they say this, I really didn't think I was a liar, but after this week, I really realized that I've been a liar some. And Jesus is hitting on a core issue about our honesty. He also talks about us being honest and faithful in other areas of our life. Are you honest in certain areas? For example, are you honest, and this is a big one today, are you honest with what goes on Facebook, with your, if you're married, with your spouse, or teenagers, with your parents, and parents with their kids? And I'm amazed, but you know, some people, they're not even friends with their family member, and maybe their husband or wife doesn't want them to be friends with them, or they keep passwords private. And a lot of people have issues with phones, and they don't want their spouse looking at their phone and text messaging, and that's gotten so many people into problems and affairs because of those things getting started through text messaging, and then it's covered up underneath the umbrella of, it is my privacy, it's my phone, you don't mess with my phone. And really what we're getting to is honesty and integrity. Are we honest in our plans? Are we honest in our history, our past? You see, a lot of these are our personal relationships, and we need to consider our honesty. Think about honesty, but now I want to shift gears as we kind of move to the second point that Jesus is talking about here in Matthew 5. And that is, he's talking about your commitments. Talking about your commitments. Jesus says, let your yes be yes, and your no be no. Don't add words for emphasis. You don't have to use a lot of extra words. Remember, Jesus would say in other contexts that for every word, every idle word that we use, we'll give an account. So we need to be careful with the words we use. Don't use frivolous words, especially foul language words, or words like swearing or oaths or things like that. Or certainly not, one of the worst ones is using the Lord's name in a vain way to try to add emphasis to what you're saying. Jesus says, just be simple about it. Let your yes stand for yes and your no stand for no, but carry it out. And then also be dependable in your commitments. Be dependable in your commitments. I was studying for this on Friday, and I thought about a few things with it.
First of all, I saw on Facebook a seller had put, what happened to the day? This is someone who put something on for sale for Graves County, and I think he does some stuff through that. And he says, what happened to the day of taking someone's word for something to be true? If you say you're going to do something, do it. If you say you're going to buy something, buy it. If not, don't leave the person hanging. I know that's a common experience a lot of people have. Someone says, hey, I'll buy that from you. So then you take it off the market or whatever. You plan on them. You're going to meet them. And they don't. While we were doing this as well, telling us, you know, just sharing confessional on the preacher, I went to the internet site, the Graves County soccer website, to find out what time Brooks' ball game was on Saturday, or soccer game that I'm the coach of. I didn't even know what time it was. That's another story. Anyways. And I realized that the soccer board meeting was scheduled for that night. Amanda and I have recently joined the soccer board. We're doing that, and we had planned, it was the kids' last day of school, they finished school, and so we'd planned to go out and kind of celebrate that, and we were looking forward to going out. And now we got a soccer board meeting from 6:30 to 8:30, and I'm thinking, man, we got to skip that meeting, we got to go eat. And it took me like 30 minutes, and I think I might have even been on the way home trying to figure out how I can get out of this meeting to realize I've been spending the last 3 hours studying what Jesus says here, and I'm trying to find a way out of my commitment. And this is what Jesus is talking about.
Be faithful and honest in your words. Try as best you can to be dependable in your commitments. Some other things I thought of.
Appointments. When you have an appointment, try to keep it. Now, you understand I'm not saying it's a sin if we were to skip the soccer board meeting, or it's a sin if you fail to make an appointment, you forget. What I'm saying is, this is the characteristics that we want to try to develop as a disciple of Jesus. That our yes means yes, and our no means no, and we're going to be dependable and reliable. When you pledge to do work, and you say you're going to have work done by a certain point, and this seems like this is any situation at any kind of group dynamics, whether it's at church, whether it's at work, whether it's in the family, and everybody's got a load to carry. Carry your load. Don't let somebody else be stuck wondering, well, there they are again. They didn't do their job. Who's going to pick up their slack? Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And so think about these other issues. Appointments, schedules, workload.
Your responsibilities and obligations you have at church, at work, and in your family. Be trustworthy in our commitments. Be dependable. Look back to what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5.
They had come up with elaborate formulas to get out of doing what they should have done. In some ways, it's very similar to what we do. We don't come up with elaborate formulas, but we come up with rationalizations. Here's why I don't have to be faithful to that commitment. Here's why it's all right if I cheat. Here's why it's all right if I tell a lie. Here's why it's all right if I cheat on my taxes a little bit and write down this number even though it was this number. Here's why it's all right if I'm not honest in whatever area. We may not have all the formulas like the Pharisees, but we do the same thing. And Jesus is simply saying, put aside that stuff. Let your yes be yes, and let your no be no. And do your best to be committed and faithful to that word. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to rededicate your life, we stand ready to help you. Come as together we stand and sing.